In the matter of John Sullivan et al. Versus Max Spann Real Estate and Auction Company et al., may we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors. Randall Peach, Wilson Anderson and Peach, on behalf of the defendant appellant, Menci Liu.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brad Batcha, appearing on behalf of the New Jersey State Bar Association as amicus.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Peter Venero of Sills, Cummins & Gross on behalf of Max Spann Real Estate and Auction Company.
And Barry Goodman, Greenbaum, Rosemith & Davis on behalf of Amicus New Jersey Realtors.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Peach, please go ahead.
Thank you. If I may, Chief Justice, could I reserve rebuttal time? 2 minutes? If necessary.
Yes, and if you'd like, you're welcome to take off the mask during oral argument. It's up to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Honorable Court. I want to start out by addressing what unfortunately I think has been a fundamental misunderstanding about the issue in the case. And to be clear, I am not attempting to graft some sort of general attorney review requirement on auctions. That would make no sense. Auctions obviously serve a vital function, would make no sense to, you know, have a general attorney review requirement affecting the finality of auction contracts. But nothing I'm advocating in this case would impair or impede the finality of auction contracts. And in fact, we've known since the Basford decision that you can easily run an auction without having a realtor prepared contract that violates this court's decision in State Bar Association. So this case is not about trying to impair the auction industry or destroy the auction industry. This court's decision in the State Bar Association case, or rather its approval of a consent judgment between the Bar Association and the realtors in that case, imposes a 3-day attorney review requirement only on contracts prepared by licensed realtors. So the rule attaches to the realtor as a professional, and that's why the rule is also codified in the regulation promulgated by the New Jersey Real Estate Commission. I think the best way to think about this is the rule follows the realtor. And wherever that realtor goes, if it's in an office, someone's living room, or an auction floor, that licensed realtor is prohibited from preparing the sales contract unless the 3-day attorney review period is included. And there are very good reasons for this, as set forth in the consent judgment. And that consent judgment is premised on making sure that the realtor, as a professional, does not engage in the unauthorized practice of law. Now, the corollary to this is that no one else is prohibited from preparing a contract without attorney review. Buyers and sellers can get together, agree to sell a piece of property, and decide not to have attorney review. That's completely acceptable so long as the final sales contract is not prepared by a licensed realtor. And that, I submit, is the lesson of the Basford decision. And we know from the decision in Basford that there's a way to lawfully avoid attorney review, not only at auctions, but in any other scenario. It's simply to not have the final contract prepared by a realtor. And in Basford, the employee or the agent of the seller, a non-realtor, was the one that prepared the contract. So I would submit that, you know, everyone, including Max Spann, has known since at least 1994 when Basford came out that, you know, auctions can quite simply avoid the issue of attorney review. And by the way, one thing you will not see in the record, anywhere in the record, is any evidence that Max Spann could not have had the final contract prepared by someone who was not a licensed realtor. Absolutely nothing in the record suggesting that there was even any inconvenience to Max Spann in doing it this way. Now, they may try to make that argument today, but just note that there's no supporting facts in the record backing up that argument. What we have in the record, I submit, are the following undisputed facts. It's undisputed this was a sale of the property covered by the ruling, 1-4 family residential piece of property. Now it's undisputed that the person preparing the final contract was a licensed realtor. And by the way, when I say realtor today, I'm referring to brokers, agents, salespeople, everyone covered by the rule. And thirdly, it's undisputed, of course, that no attorney review was included in that final sales contract. So whatever else your honors may decide in this case, I ask that you not lose sight of the fact that the literal wording of that consent judgment was violated here. The consent judgment uses the word every contract.
Mr. Peach, I take it from the way you began your opening that you agree if an attorney review requirement were to be imposed as a general proposition, it would end auctions as we know them.
Well, yes, it would be very problematic. I don't know. Yes, the answer is yes.
So what do you envision happening when the hammer goes down?
Well,
practically, what follows that?
Well, in this case, what follows is
we know what happened here.
Final sales contract. Now, right. could you structure a transaction where it's over when the hammer falls? I think you could.
Without there being any contract.
Well, it's unclear. I don't know, and it's unclear to me how you don't have any sort of writing. I mean, the gavel falls. Does everyone just walk out?
That's why I want to try to understand the suggestion that you're presenting, how that works out in practice. If you could follow it through for us.
Well, in practice, I think first of all, in practice, you don't have this two-step process where the gavel falls and then you go in and prepare the final sales contract with a licensed realtor. Now, you don't even get to the question of needing it to end when the gavel falls if you're not using a realtor to prepare that final contract to begin with.
It sounds as though you're not disputing with the notion that you need to have a final contract of sale.
Yes.
So who would prepare it? Who would fill in the blanks? When would it be done?
Well, you could have a procedure where everything they did up until here, and the gavel falls, and I think the easiest thing to do is what they did in Bassford, which is to have a non-realtor fill out, I don't like to use the word filling out, prepare. To me, it's not just filling in the blanks, it's preparation. To have a non-realtor prepare that final contract.
And who would that be?
It could be the parties themselves. It could be, like in Bassford, someone working, an agent of the seller, an employee. In that case, it was a corporation or a business, so it was an employee of the seller. It could be anybody. Anybody but a realtor who this court has held can engage in the unauthorized practice of law.
Is it good policy to have a rule that would encourage people running auctions to have the parties, the seller and buyer, who presumably are lay people with no experience, or maybe they have some experience in the real estate field, trying to put together a contract? I mean, that seems to me to be an invitation to litigation over the meaning of a contract if you don't have someone involved who is knowledgeable and a professional in the real estate field. The panacea you're offering is that people do their own contracts. Is that really what we want to encourage?
Well, at that point, you are filling out the final template. And I think somebody simply needs to supervise it. I don't know if they should be alone.
That can't be a broker or a realtor. who, as the chief was saying, who can be the parties themselves?
Anyone else who's not, who this court has held is not, you know, engaged in, you know, by trade and by experience, is geared toward finalizing the deal, not necessarily acting in the best interests.
Doesn't that create even more problems? You're not having people who are not familiar with, you said anyone, people who are not familiar with the real estate sales or what an auction concept is, filling out these contracts. Is that better than what was done here?
I don't think it needs to be that complicated. In Bassford, it was done that way. And, you know, it could, you know, people, they're very sophisticated people who do their jobs, and they're not licensed realtors.
But it's not limited to licensed realtors, is it? It also includes brokers and salespeople, really.
Yes. I'm sorry, Justice, when I'm using the term realtors as a catch-all.
Right. It has a number of different categories involved.
Yes.
And
it can't be any of those.
It seems to me that those categories, while not perhaps 100% of the people out there who for a living as professionals deal with real estate, it's big swaths of that population of people. And you're saying the answer here is to take this away from the professionals and to put the contract in the hands of people who are not professionals in the real estate field. Does that make sense?
Well, except that it's done that way. I mean, you know, people buy and sell real estate without realtors involved. And they do it. Sometimes they don't, you know, for the initial contract, at least, they don't even have the attorneys involved. And they can waive attorneys. They can waive attorney review.
Right. That's people's choice. But what you're saying is it has to be done this way in order to make the auction process function.
Yes.
It has to be done without a professional who is within the category of people covered by this rule. Is that a good idea?
I think it's completely doable, and I think they did it in Bassford.
And of course, we're talking about filling in the blanks, following the language of the case law and what actually happened here. But going back a step in time, somebody, I presume, would be providing a nearly complete contractual document, in this case with 30 paragraphs.
Yes.
We're not expecting the buyer and seller to create that document, right?
No.
So where would that come from?
Well,
in practice,
you could. I mean, look, I'm not objecting to the way this was carried out up until the final sales contract. Because remember, you can have a template. You can provide a template to people before the auction, and
which would be the realtor in all likelihood.
Yes. Yeah. The realtor can prepare them. I mean, the templates often, you know, they can come from realtors. But the problem is with that final sales contract and filling it out. And, you know, the undue pressure that may come at that point.
Is there any indication, as you read the New Jersey State Bar Association case, that the court contemplated auctions?
Obviously I'm going to agree with Judge Fuentes that I don't know how the court could not have been aware of them at the time. And if they're aware of them and they're not excluding them, then they have to be included. And again, I think it's a mistake to focus on the event to say, well, does it apply with auctions? Does it apply here or there? It's the focus is the realtor. Wherever that realtor is, that realtor cannot prepare the contract under the consent judgment. But I think they had to have been well aware of auctions, which were certainly going on. Forget the year of the decision. They're certainly going on at that time.
Right. I know this calls for a little speculation, but is there anything in the opinion that suggests the court was encouraging the kind of practice that you're advocating now? Seems like we're far afield from the language. That's why I ask it.
Well, it's just, again, just the term every contract with no exceptions. The regulation uses the word all contracts. It's all encompassing. And it's meant to impose a bright line rule. And the good thing about a bright line rule is that you can just keep applying it and you don't have to worry about trying to make exceptions from case to case. And again, whatever you may rule going forward, if we're going to apply the rule of law, my client should get her money back based on what the rule was then.
By the way, at what point did your client raise the issue of attorney review?
It was raised, she didn't raise it at all originally, and I did not represent her. I, of course, would have raised it. It was not raised, therefore, until the summary judgment stage. Trial judge raised it sua sponte. I think that is important because, as soon as the judge sort of saw this issue or saw the way this was carried out, that became an issue in the trial judge's mind, even without anyone raising it to him. And the dissenting judge below, Judge Fuentes, he obviously felt the same way. You know, your honors may well disagree with each other about how to view this, but to me, what that means is that, Max Spann had no business just doing this when they had to know there was at least an issue. And yet, to me, the attitude was, well, we're just going to do this until someone says we can't. I think that because of that, I mean, they're the ones. Max Spann is the one that very much caused the problem here, especially knowing from Bassford not only that there was an issue, but how to potentially address the issue. So, again, there's been a few different options that have been urged on your honors, and obviously the option I'm going to urge is that you simply apply the bright line rule. Simple, it's straightforward, and it has the effect of putting the parties back where they were. Ms. Liu gets her money back. Remember, this is not a case where, because this is the other type of case where someone buys the property and thinks after the auction, oh my God, why did I do that? And now I have this property. At least they have the property they could sell. She's out the property, she's out her deposit money. I think she's entitled to get that back, even if your honors were to do something else going forward to clarify the issue. And Max Spann, they get to keep at least that second commission. They complain that they're not, they want the first commission from the loose sale because it's higher, but there's no prejudice to Max Spann, and there's certainly no undue prejudice if they're held only to that second commission. Because again, I would submit that they're the ones that created this problem. And lastly, I just want to, the other advantage of a bright line application, bright line rule, is that the court will achieve finality. Looking at the trial court's decision, which the appellate division affirmed, the trial court didn't just say attorney review doesn't apply, which would be one thing. He made it conditional. A couple different steps. There had to be sufficient time to review the contract. There had to be sufficient notice to obtain an attorney. And to me, that's just a recipe for more litigation down the line. Well, was there sufficient time here? What was the notice? Was that enough? And as the Bar Association has mentioned, what's an auction? You may get into that issue. So, to me, the best approach, apply the bright line rule, and also, finally, in applying the bright line rule, your honors, get to assert or reassert your constitutional authority in this case to regulate the practice of law.
Can I ask you just a couple practical questions?
Yes.
Trying to get my head around the concept and how it's going to apply in an instance like this. The contract is completely drawn up, completely, all the terms are the realtor's terms, wherever they come from. Could be a form, could have bought it from Clark's, whatever. It's a form, and it's a contract
completely drafted, everything's filled in by the realtor except the amount, correct?
Yes. Well, there were some other spaces, amount, deposit.
Yeah, just they relate to the dollars that can't be finalized until the gavel falls, as I recall. I mean, maybe I'm...
There were a couple spaces left blank, even. It was more than just the price, but I understand Your Honor's point.
In other words, the terms of the real estate sale in the contract are drafted, prepared, given to bidders who have filed to bid.
Yes.
All that's done beforehand. Everybody's got it. Everybody knows it, right?
Yes.
So that the things that the attorney review period, that's part of the settlement, later became the statute, that an attorney would review, already prepared, they're done, the bidders had a chance to look at it, that's all finished, that's in print, that's not negotiable, that's the parties make a choice. That's already done, correct?
Well, it's done, but I would not agree that, well, look, an attorney in attorney review could reject the contract for any reason.
I understand, but I'm saying, you're suggesting that that document, once the gavel falls, is the document that is the contract. All the terms that the attorney would review are in that contract. The only thing that's missing, essentially, relate to the successful bidder. The terms that a lawyer would review are already written in the contract. They're in stone. They're not changing.
With the template, do you mean?
Yes.
Well, I would not agree because, well, first of all, the purchase price, which could...
I just said that. I said other than the amounts.
Yes.
And you said there, I don't remember other blanks that related to anything. Other than amounts and the deposit, all dollars. But if there are, but I'm just saying that template that was provided to the successful bidder, prepared by the real estate agent or the realtor, that an attorney would review, they're all etched in stone, everybody's got them, everybody knows what they contain. That's, nobody's disputing those terms.
Correct.
What your contention is, until the amounts related to the successful bidder are in the contract, it's not prepared, done, it's not in violation of the statute, or the settlement, or our decisions, because it's not completed and signed. That's your contention.
Well, I think my contention is even simpler, that the broker's engaged in the unauthorized practice of law.
Because he's filling in the amounts.
Yes.
Okay. Substantively, however, it's not the amounts that would void that the attorney review period relates to, is it?
Well, yes, I think that an attorney can, and I think often does, you know, reject or advise the rejecting of a contract based on the purchase price.
For any reason.
Yeah, I mean, you just agreed to pay $10 million for that one room house.
And that's your contention. However, auction's done, price is decided, all those numbers that if they're filled in by the real estate agent are a violation. But if they're filled in by the clerk, who's not a licensed real estate broker, not an agent, the person maybe who's typing up what's being said at the auction, that's okay.
Yes.
That's not a violation.
No.
Even though the terms are not negotiable, everything else in the contract as is, no contingencies, they're inviolate. They can't be changed. They're written in stone. Even though it's the same, if the real estate agent filled it in, as if the clerk filled it in, they're the same.
Yes. But, you know, I would submit that that's very close to the normal situation outside the auction. I mean, the final sales contract often has a similar amount of blanks for the purchase price.
Not saying that. I'm just suggesting the things in the contract, mortgage contingencies.
Yes.
You know, the different improvements that can be required, if structural damage, structural things that give the buyer some out.
Yes.
Those are the things that are important typically in a real estate contract that are the subject of negotiation after the contract's drafted, presented in the attorney reviews. Those are not at issue here.
Well, let me just note that in addition to the purchase price and the other numbers having to do with the deposit and the balance, you know, paragraph, and I'm at DA 114 of the appendix, paragraph 24 was left blank, and which had to do with its declaration of the licensee's business relationship. In the following page, DA 115, the closing paragraph is left blank.
But you're not suggesting there's not a contract because those were left blank, are you?
Well, I say there's no contract at all.
No.
Because of...
Is it because of those two paragraphs?
It's because the...
Your argument was about the attorney review problem.
Yes.
And but so the fact, you've pointed to some blanks that weren't filled in. If there had been a provision for attorney review, hypothetically, would those blanks create a problem with the contract?
Well, no, not, well, right. No, because it would be an attorney review anyway. It wouldn't become an issue. I was answering the hypothetical, isn't it just purchase price? And I was pointing out.
I think, and that's what I'm questioning about. It appears that if you look at DA 111, the first page, all we're talking about is six numbers that were filled in, and of course, the purchaser's name and address and phone number.
Yes. And then there's a blank on 114 and 115, should have been filled in, they were not. And I'm suggesting this is not too different from the normal situation where you have a template. I mean, normally, Your Honors, that real estate, that the licensed realtor is only filling in the blanks of the template, which has most of the information in.
But in a normal situation, you have the ability to have a remedy if the attorney says that you paid too much. You used an example where the attorney says you shouldn't have paid $1 million for one room house.
Yes.
And voids the contract on that basis. When you have an auction, you have potentially, most of the time, other bidders, and all of a sudden, there's attorney review, and the attorney tells the winning bidder, you paid too much, someone in your client's position. And so the winning bidder then backs out. Then you have to consider what are the remedies for the other bidders who went away without the house they were looking to buy. Do they become the winning bidder by virtue of that? Do you redo the auction with new individuals? Attorney review, would you agree, is tremendously disruptive to the auction process.
Well, in Your Honor's hypothetical, if I may, an issue would only be made of the purchase price if the licensed realtor fills out.
I understand that. But you're saying that attorney review should in that situation
yes,
happen, but you can't even hold an auction under those circumstances.
But there's no reason to have an auction that way with the broker engaged in the unauthorized practice of law. It can easily be done as it was done in Bassford, not have a realtor involved. And it's not going to affect the finality of it.
Well, Mr. Peach, so you've pointed out the blanks that on page DA 114 and 115 that were not filled out. So we know this contract was filled out by a licensed professional. But in your suggested practice going forward, you've indicated that anyone else can fill this out. The parties themselves can fill it out. Again, how do we think that's going to work practically for people who are not professionals in this industry filling out these contracts when you yourself have pointed us to look places in this contract that was filled out by a licensed professional, but blanks were left?
Well, again, Justice, I don't think, I don't think licensed realtors are the only source of intelligent people or sophisticated people that could supervise the filling out of a contract like this.
So who would be the supervisors in this scenario? Who, if the parties in your suggested practice, the parties themselves would fill out this contract, who would be the ones supervising them in doing that, if not the realtors or the brokers?
You need input from the auctioneer. I think... some neutral, either an employee an agent of somebody who's not a broker, an attorney could do it, and anybody could do it, and I think anyone, you know, anyone's smart enough to do it, they don't need to be a realtor. They don't need to be using their real estate background and training to, you know, to sort of get the sale.
Isn't the auctioneer's role very limited? And by design, the auctioneer, tell me if I'm wrong, the auctioneer doesn't get involved with the auctioneer's off to the next property, and they're auctioning off the next property. They don't get involved in the finalization of a real estate contract in practice, do they?
Well, I believe here Max Spann acted as the auctioneer.
Right, but that was it. But you're saying somebody different from Max Spann should have been the auctioneer. An auctioneer who's not in Max Spann's position could fill in the blanks. I mean, that just seems to be an expansion of the traditional role of an auctioneer, isn't it?
Well, it wouldn't have to be the auctioneer. I think we need input from interested parties on this, but you know, it could be anybody. It could be someone employed for that process. It could be the parties themselves.
Suppose the parties themselves did this without input from the realtor, but they changed some of the numbers that appear on the first page of the contract. What do you anticipate would have happened, probably within minutes? Suppose they didn't include the full 10% for the buyer's premium. Suppose they used a lower number for the amount of money that was to be held in escrow. What do you imagine would have occurred then?
Well, it would have been voided.
By?
Probably by the broker.
That's the point that I'm concerned about. It seems that the proposal we're discussing inevitably involves the broker in a meaningful way with respect to the language of the contract. Is there a way around that?
Well, again, the way around it is the way from Bassford to have a third party, have a person who this court has not held, to whom there's not an issue about the unauthorized practice of law to do it. And again, I think there needs to be input on that. But I think the way Max Spann did it was just to say we're just going to do it this way, even though literally we're violating the rule. But
do you think that would be a better approach than the court recrafting a rule in this area?
What would be a better scenario?
Buyer and seller working things out with someone not related to the realtor being involved, not related to the realtor / auctioneer. Some of the other proposals that have been advanced.
I think it could be up to the Real Estate Commission potentially. I think the burden to some extent is on Max Spann to come up with a way that doesn't violate the rule. And all these other options that we're talking about, they may all be problematic, but none of them have that particular problem that you're having someone engaged in the unauthorized practice of law.
The questions I asked were headed at this. Aren't you elevating form over substance? In other words, how does your suggestion in any way serve, or how does what happened here not serve the purpose of the statute or the settlement in State Bar Association?
Well, I think in two ways, Justice. First, because there's this two-step process here, and Ms. Liu goes to the second final step, which is the preparation of the sales contract. Now, I don't think anyone could say that she had walked out of the room and not signed the contract. I don't think there she could be held to this purchase. So she has to sign that contract.
That's true of every auction.
Well,
and every real estate auction, whether a realtor is involved or not. That's true of every auction.
No, I understand. But my point is, at that point in time, that, and according to her testimony, and this is very clear in the trial record, she's pressured for the final time to sign the contract. And that's what brings that's why this is not form over substance, because the very premise of this rule, at least in my opinion, is that we don't want someone with the training experience to do things that are not necessarily in the buyer's best interests.
All right, I get that. Let me ask you one last question. No other questions, I promise. If Max Spann had hired an auctioneer, experience, knowledge about auctions, knows you got the deal's done when the gavel drops or hammer drops, person's got to sign the receipt on the way out the door or the contract, an auctioneer conducts the auction. Same scenario as this. Every other fact is the same. Spann's just the realtor who listed it, but the auctioneer is hired to do the auction. Everything's exactly the same. Is that okay?
Yes, if the auctioneer does not come under the rule, and I'm not.
He's not a realtor. He's an auctioneer. He's John Smith auctioneer. I auction jewelry. I auction real estate. I auction vehicles.
That condition, absolutely yes.
Okay. But the pressures that you're talking about are
the same.
Inherent to the auction process. Your client chose to buy an expensive property at auction.
He did.
And yet. Some of your concerns seem to be that she was exposed to the pressures of making an immediate decision. How can you avoid pressure on a buyer in the setting of a real estate auction?
Well, the pressure, and I'm not, I've certainly mentioned the pressures at the auction, and for context, but my problem with the transaction is with the pressure on that final contract, and putting aside whether the pressure on her for a minute, if the bright line rule is that we don't want brokers engaging in unauthorized practice of law, we have a broker in that room knowing she's got to get the signature on that contract, because remember, it didn't stop when the gavel fell. It's not like the gavel fell and everyone left. They go to the second part of it. Now you have a licensed realtor in the room doing the very thing this court said could not be done, which is to fill out the blanks of that final contract and pressure the buyer into signing it.
Well, this court really didn't exactly say that in the State Bar Association case. I mean, your argument is that it was implicit.
Maybe paraphrasing.
Yes. But the State Bar did not expressly deal with an auction situation. It was dealing with an entirely different factual setting, and the question is whether it should be extrapolated to this auction setting. Isn't that correct?
Well, again, I think it's a mistake to focus on the event, whether it's an auction or not auction. You focus on the person, the realtor. And I wasn't suggesting that the consent judgment, consent judgment said nothing about auctions.
Right.
My point was it was the consent judgment prohibits the very thing that occurred here. In terms of
the consent judgment was focused on what the court believed at the time was in the best interest of the members of the public. Protection of the public was the key concern. That doesn't mean protection of the public can't be accomplished in a different way in this setting, in an auction setting. Would you agree with that?
Generally, yes. I think the court can address it as it sees fit. My focus, of course, as Ms. Liu's attorney, is to focus on the violation of the bright line rule at that point.
I understand why you're arguing what you're arguing, but I just wanted to get your agreement that we're not dealing with an express holding that is tying our hands at this point.
Mr. Peach, following up on Justice Solomon's hypothetical, if an independent auctioneer did all that was done here by Max Spann, conducted the auction, presented the legal document, filled in the empty spaces, would there be an argument that the auctioneer had engaged in the unlawful practice of law?
If they're not a realtor under that decision, no.
I'm not asking about that decision. It clearly doesn't cover it. I'm asking about.
Yeah, no. No, I was just saying as long as they're not a covered. I wasn't sure without looking up auctioneer as being a realtor.
Put the State Bar Association case aside. Could a thoughtful attorney come forward and seek to void the contract, arguing that the auctioneer had done exactly what the court said the real estate broker should not be doing?
But the auctioneer is not a broker, no. There's no argument to that because that's not.
What if the auctioneer is hired by the broker? That seems to be the suggestion. Wouldn't an attorney come forward and say, this is simply an arm of the broker, an agent of the broker? There's no difference here. if the auctioneer's hired by Maxspan to do what's in the interest of Maxspan, they are within the ambit of a broker for purposes of the state bar case.
It's possible.
Right. So how does that? It seems like the practical options you're offering here are either the parties try to do this themselves, which might work. Parties sometimes come up with perfectly workable contracts, but sometimes there's litigation for years over contracts that parties agree to, or a person sort of emerges who's not hired by the opposite party, who is just sort of there. You talk about the real estate commission. How are they going to be putting people into these situations to fill in blanks? And what's the incentive for those people to do that? Or who's paying them?
I think there needs to be some input and some facts about how this could work. I wish there had been more fact-finding below, before I was involved at the trial. But there's nothing in the record, from my standpoint, there's nothing in the record from the broker saying we can't do it this way. Hypothetically, they could say, for this reason, we have to have someone in the room, but it has to be this person, but we can't do it that way because they're an agent. But there's nothing in the record to that effect. I'm not sure it's my burden to come up with that. Aside from saying the way they did it, it was a literal violation of the rule.
Just to be clear on the undisputed facts, your client had previously engaged in auctions before, correct? And purchased properties through those prior experiences. Is that correct?
She had participated in auctions before, but never successfully bid.
I thought she successfully bid on one.
I don't believe so. I may be.
Yeah, I thought that as well. You could clarify that.
I was almost positive she had never successfully bid before. Let me try to find the citation. Yeah, they previously attended auctions held by Span, but had never successfully bid on property before.
Did they bid unsuccessfully once before?
I don't have that offhand. I could obtain that for Your Honor.
That's all right.
I believe so. I can't say for certain. And I'm not sure it came up at trial.
Mr. Peach, we'll have you back for rebuttal. Anything you want to say in closing?
No. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Batcha.
Thank you, Chief Justice. And good morning, members of the court. I'm here on behalf of the State Bar Association. I just want to thank the court for letting us participate in this important discussion about the Attorney Review Clause. We joined because we did learn that auctioneers were kind of taking the consumer protection part into their own hands. They were ignoring the Attorney Review Clause and Opinion 26 that this court promulgated. And instead, they changed. They had a couple other consumer protections. Now, some of those might be good, but they weren't mandated by this court. And we think that it's very important, especially in the context of auctions. Auctions are very risky. I was at a CLE panel last month, and there was a seasoned foreclosure attorney who said, I would never let any of my clients bid on an auction. It's something for sophisticated people. There's a lot of risks. You don't have the right to due diligence. You don't have the right to financing. The title clauses are weak, and it's much more risky than a traditional residential contract where you have the ability to have due diligence, the ability to have inspections, the ability to seek out financing. So we feel that the lower court's ruling here is not good law for the public. There's a lack of framework for consumer protection, and there's uncertainty about what constitutes an auction. And by the way, to your point.
Yeah, so what are the criteria for sophistication under your analysis? How would that be? How would that take place? If you've been to one auction, you can't go. If you've been to four, you're sophisticated. If you're successful, yes. If not, then you're not. Do you think that's a workable criteria
I don't see it that way, Justice. What I do see is that a sufficient warning should be given that this is not for amateurs. You know, it seems that the folks who are outbidding at auctions.
How do you become experienced if you're not allowed, amateurs are not out to bid? How do they gain any practical experience?
Justice,
you have to be an expert to then go to the auction.
It would not be a direct prohibition. It would just be a warning. You know, this is a risky thing. You should seek out the advice of counsel, especially if you're new at this. It seems as a practical matter, the folks that are bidding on auctions do this as a big business. And if they lose on one deal because that house had mold or an underground oil tank, they can take it. That's part of doing business. But if one consumer goes out and buys that house that's ridden with termites or mold or has environmental problems, that's a major problem for a consumer. So that's the point that we think should be made. And my takeaway, and our takeaway from State Bar is, and I think this is the point that Justice Ravner was seeking, is that nobody can prepare a real estate contract in New Jersey unless you're an attorney, or in this carved out exception, realtors can do it for 1 to 4 family homes if they put the consumer protection clause of the attorney review and opinion 26. So in the example we discussed earlier with Mr. Peach, I don't think an auctioneer could prepare that, and I do think the argument would be that's the unauthorized practice law because they're preparing a real estate contract for a fee for another party, and that's the role of an attorney. So there's been some discussion.
But to be clear, you don't see anyone really who is other than someone who's doing this is on some sort of volunteer basis because as a public service, I hope those people exist, but I would find it odd if they were popping into auction.
That's what I was exactly envisioning. Who's going to do this for free?
Who would do this? Yeah.
Only a party. A party can do it, sure.
Right.
Just like a party can represent themselves.
Right.
But an attorney would be the only party who could prepare a contract for a fee for two other parties.
Right. So there really is no one who might be knowledgeable, other than if a party happens to be knowledgeable, about real estate transactions who could do this job in an auction setting.
I agree, Justice. And if we're going to take the departure from requiring an attorney review clause, by the way, I think that's the best way to handle an attorney review, but I understand there are limitations with the finality of an auction if you impose attorney review, both on the buyer and the seller. There's no finality. That's the nature of attorney review. Mm. But it is the absolute best protection because, I talk to clients every day for 27 years. Most of them don't read contracts. When they call me, we go through things carefully. They understand what they're doing. We make changes to the contracts, and then they move forward. That's the ultimate in consumer protection in the bar's opinion. If this court seeks to allow realtors to have the finality of an auction, which I understand there's a business need to have that, then I think the remedy would be that we, number one, we define what an auction is. I mean, this has been a crazy year we've had, and the bidding wars are off the charts. I don't want a situation to occur where realtors say, you know what, we're going to call this an auction. Everyone's bids by next Thursday. No attorney review. No one has these protections that we've afforded them through the attorney review clause. We don't want that to be a slippery slope. Now, if we define an auction carefully and it truly is an auction, let's say it's 30 days in advance. I mean, Maxspan did some good consumer protection things here. They said 30 days in advance. I'd been on their website. I joined as a bidder. Same contract, it's published, you can read it in advance, you can seek out counsel. You have to sign a pre-registration as a bidder. I think that's critical because then you've identified that these people have had the time to see the bid, to see the contract, to consult with a lawyer. I mean, as a practical matter, a lot of them may not engage a lawyer because most of them won't want to spend money on a lawyer when they're not the winning bidder yet. And then the second problem is if they were to engage an attorney, I don't know that this attorney is going to make any headway negotiating thing. It's really going to be more of a warning that, you know, if you sign this contract, you better be prepared. You might lose your deposit, or you might run into an oil tank, or you might have some mold in the home. So again, that's ideal, but I think what we could do is define the auction, identify so we don't have people kind of having a slippery slope of what is an auction, what isn't an auction. And then we should also pose, some of the other characteristics which are here.
Before you move off.
Yes.
By having the pre-registration requirement, it would solidify the pool of people who would be regarded as legally qualified to bid in the auction as defined.
That's correct, Justice.
Correct?
I think that's a fair thing for consumer protection. I do.
Okay. So then is your last problem then simply filling in the numbers from the
falling of the gavel?
I don't necessarily have a problem with that, because I think if we're going to depart from the requirement of attorney review, mm-hmm. we're going to put consumer protection devices in place.
Maybe not depart from attorney review, but have it done in advance.
Okay, in advance. Maybe it has to be in advance. And again, practically, I don't think they're going to deviate a contract and say, if this bidder wins, we'll go with this version.
Agreed. But let's assume that the consumer decides to go forward with the auction anyway.
If we put the consumer protections in place, then I think the broker is the appropriate party to fill out the form. I do think under Calvert that is preparing a contract. You'll note this particular contract with Maxspan, it was clearly a Maxspan contract. I mean, the biggest paragraph in there talked about releasing Maxspan. Right. The other one said they get half the deposit. This was not prepared by a seller. It was prepared by a realtor, just as Mr. Goodman prepares and assists with the New Jersey Association of Realtors contract. Mm-hmm. And that's a fine contract, but we have an attorney review clause which lets us protect buyers and sellers.
So the bar's position is you wouldn't have a problem with the prior review with the realtor filling in the numbers on.
I think as a practical matter, that's the only way to do it.
Okay.
You know, I don't see any other professional having a higher degree of expertise, but they're earning a commission, and the same concerns are here that we're in state bar, you know, that someone's trying to make a sale and get somebody to sign up. But it's tempered by having this done in advance, the need for the finality, and warnings to the consumer. And Maxspan had a warning. It wasn't mandated by this court. They came out and they did it, which was, you know, admirable. But they also ignored the two consumer protections that this court said you have to have.
I understand your argument. Thank you.
And how would you define an auction?
So I think a couple of the hallmarks of an auction might be that you have an advance notice of the auction, that you have a finite period when the bidding can occur. You know, in this case, and I thought this was relevant, and I'm not sure this has to make its way into a rule, but if there's no reserve, it's a real auction versus like a bidding war who, you know, I want to get $1 million for my house and I say, oh yeah, make it an auction next week. But if I don't get my million, it's not really an auction. So the lack of a reserve certainly is a hallmark of a true auction.
But auctions do have reserves.
Auctions do have reserves. So I'm not sure if that's going to be absolute.
You could be knocking that out. Now, you talked about a temporal limitation, and you talked about the potential for realtors to say, who have obviously a lot of interested buyers, submit your bids by next Thursday, and that's really not an auction. So are we talking about same day? Are we talking about a process where the gavel ends it hour after it began?
I think if we're going to create this exception where realtors can now fill out contracts that were prepared by counsel for a realtor, we have to have some protections in advance. And I think timing is critical because we don't want this to happen on a moment's notice. And to Maxspan's credit, I looked at their website and look, there's other guys out there. We're worried that while in 1983, this probably was a very small percentage of the transactions that occur, and I still think it is, we are concerned that if an exception's created, we now have online auctions that are starting to ramp up.
Right.
And they're targeting, and you're getting emails every day.
Let me clarify. Yeah. I'm not talking about timing. You're talking about advance and the
just like the bidder registration. You must register a week in advance.
Right. That's one kind of timing. But what I'm asking about is your concept of an auction something that the bidding begins and ends in a very short period of time? Because you were talking about the potential for a realtor to sort of create a pseudo auction by saying 10 days from today is
right.
the end of this.
That's really essentially
circumventing attorney review about something that the auctioneer. And they talk fast, these auctioneers, from a little bit I know of it. They start the bidding and they end the bidding in a very short period of time, maybe a half an hour, maybe 20 minutes, maybe two hours, right?
I think that is a hallmark of a traditional auction that we're used to seeing. But I think we have to, you know, be wary of what the future holds and that there are online auctions. And, I mean, they're akin to like an eBay. You can bid up until a certain time. I don't know if it's that critical when the bids begin. I think it is critical that you have a finite ending date. That's one of the hallmarks. Yes.
In State Bar, we had two sides with great expertise in this issue work out a consent the framework for a consent judgment and present it to the court.
Yes.
I noticed that your position is have a special master or create a committee to come forward. This may not be the ideal way for us to work out all of the protections that you would suggest that the court include. Would that be?
You mean this dialogue today?
Yes.
Yeah, I understand, Chief. And I thought just because that's how we crafted the earlier version. And to that point, Mr. Goodman and I have had discussions on, you know, how we could do this. And we didn't come to any particular framework, and now we're here today. But it might be worth a dialogue or a committee or something of that nature to craft carefully excellent consumer protections in the context of the auction, because we're going to remove that from the requirement that you have. The hallmark and the best protection we are aware of, this is the attorney review in opinion 26.
I gather it will take longer than the 5 minutes you're allotted for oral argument.
A few months, I imagine, Justice, yes.
Other questions?
No.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, again, we're just concerned that the lower court's opinion would stand because it creates this uncertainty with the lack of the definition of an auction. And it lacks completely any consumer protection requirements since we're pulling out the attorney review clause in opinion 26, according to what the lower courts have ruled.
When you say lower court, you're referring to the appellate division?
Well, the appellate division affirmed Judge Comp's decision, but both of those lack any consumer protection in the context of an auction, which, as I mentioned, you know, we think these are particularly risky endeavors, as we see here with a client who lost $120,000.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Schwang.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Chief Justices of the Supreme Court. May it please the court, I represent the sellers, Mr. Sullivan and the Sullivan Grantor Retained Income Trust. My clients are not here today because of the attorney review clause or their desire to change how auctions are conducted in New Jersey. They're here today because the defendant appellant misrepresented her financial wherewithal to complete the cash deal before she walked into that auction. And had she not done that, she would have never been allowed into the auction, and she would have never entered into a contract with my clients. They're here today also because Ms. Liu knew that she had a budget of $700,000 to $800,000, and she learned of this budget because she consulted with a mortgage lender prior to coming to the auction. Yet when she got to that auction, she bid and she bid and she bid until she ultimately, with that 10% fee that goes to Max Span, exceeded her budget by over $400,000. My clients are here because Ms. Liu then reneged on her promise to purchase their home. And we've heard a lot of discussions about Max Span and Ms. Liu and Ms. Liu's rights and the rights of buyers, but as sellers, my clients are entitled to protections as well. And here, their protections were encapsulated and embodied within the liquidated damages clause that Ms. Liu agreed to and entered into willingly and knowingly. And my clients don't have a stake in the attorney review clause or how Max Span conducts their auctions in the future. And with respect to those arguments and I guess those questions of policy, I do defer to Mr. Vernero and Mr. Goodman, whose collective experience dwarfs mine. But I hope that my job here today is to simply do my best to make sure that my clients' legal rights and remedies don't become collateral damage in what I see as this latest chapter in a dispute between the SBA and the New Jersey Realtors Association. I think that the record makes clear that there's really no reason in law or equity to allow Ms. Liu, who ultimately, in my opinion, created this situation and put herself in this bad situation due to her own actions. And we really shouldn't permit her to essentially retroactively use the lack of the attorney review clause to rescind the contract and escape her responsibilities under the liquidated damages clause. She had the ability to consult with an attorney. She had a lot of time leading up to this auction to look at the property, and in fact, she visited it twice. She did consult with a lender to try to figure out exactly what her financial capabilities were. And moreover, she had the ability, more so than many Americans in the United States, she had the luxury of owning 6 properties. She went through this process 6 times. And in fact, for 5 of those properties, she was a landlord. And as a result, the very nature of that transaction between herself and her tenants means that she understands the sanctity of contracts. Now, I'm not saying these things to disparage Ms. Liu. I'm saying these because she initially raised these arguments at the trial level where she stated, well, you know, I'm a victim, and Max Spann pulled the wool over my eyes, and I didn't really understand the process. Well, we know that that's not true, and I ask that the court accept the trial court's factual findings with respect to those, with respect to that record. Now, at all times, with respect to the attorney review clause, she testified that she'd own the property today if she had the money. And in my opinion, if that's the case, she's not asking the court to use the attorney review clause for its intended purpose, but instead, she's asking the court to let her out of the liquidated damages clause, which was my client's rights and remedies. And in doing so, we're essentially reshaping how we conduct auctions, potentially, because of that. And with all due respect, I don't think that that's how we should proceed. And that concludes my opening statement. Thank you.
Is there anything you'd like to expand upon?
Not at this point.
Other questions, anyone? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Venero.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. The threshold question before the court is whether a 3-day attorney review period should have applied to the auction sale of real estate at issue in this case. Respectfully, the answer is no. The legal construct of an auction sale is fundamentally different than a regular or non-auction sale. It was a regular sale, not an auction sale, that gave rise to the attorney review period that this court approved as part of the 1983 settlement between the State Bar and Realtors. Those same organizations are before the court today, this time as amici. And they essentially agree that auction sales likely were never contemplated under their prior settlement, and with good reason. The auction form of sale is centered on finality. In the Panetta case, this court affirmed the longstanding law of absolute auctions. The lodging of the highest bid creates an enforceable contract. The review of materials and any related legal advice occurs before the auction takes place. True to that feature, nearly a month before the auction, appellant received a template contract and a robust set of disclosures that would govern the sale. Appellant was informed of the benefit of retaining an attorney to advise her. She chose not to do so. These materials and this extended pre-auction attorney review period allowed appellant to make an informed decision on whether to bid at the auction, which then properly led her to sign the agreement as the highest bidder. Under these circumstances, appellant should not be relieved of her contractual obligations. To do otherwise would be unfair to the seller and to all the other bidders, themselves consumers at this same auction, who presumably relied on the rules in place when this auction occurred. In its Opinion 26 decision, this court stressed that we should be, quote, practical, not theoretical, close quote, in determining issues related to the unauthorized practice of law. And we should avoid, quote, technical restrictions which have no reasonable justifications, close. And of course, we must weigh the public interest. And we do so by analyzing competing policies and interests. Your Honors, it would not be practical or reasonable to strip away the finality of auctions, to change their definition, to change their legal construct, or to dilute their value in the manner proposed by appellant. Nor would it serve the public interest, especially when weighed against the fact that the auction form of sale is beneficial to those who choose to participate in it, both sellers and bidders alike. Given the legal construct and design of auctions, coupled with the fact that auction sales were not seemingly contemplated under the 1983 settlement, in the case now before the court, it should not have mattered who picked up the pen and filled in the few contractual blanks before the written agreement was signed. Respectfully, for all those reasons, appellant's position is wrong on the law, wrong on public policy, and wrong on the equities of this case. We urge the court to affirm the appellate division in all respects. That concludes my opening statement.
Mr. Venero, I don't see in my reading of the state bar that the court contemplated auctions either. But the language that's used, in particular the language at page 41, is quite broad. It states, real estate brokers and salesmen are permanently enjoined and restrained from drafting, filling in blanks, or preparing contracts for the sale of real estate, the very title of the document in this case, and that doing so shall constitute the unauthorized practice of law. Does the case appear to encompass what took place here?
I don't think so, respectfully, Chief Justice, because of context. And context, of course, matters, both when reviewing a statute or regulation, and context matters quite a lot when a court decides an issue. So you go back to State versus Bender, which was the 1970 case, which started this whole process when you had a criminal charge lodged against a realtor. For in that case, it was more than filling in the blanks. It was actually, as I remember that case, drafting clauses, drafting actual parts of the agreement. And that person was prosecuted for unlawful practice of law. And the Supreme Court said, the trial court said, that's an unconstitutional provision. Only the Supreme Court can say whether that's an unauthorized practice of law. And this court decided it needed a fuller record to decide what is and isn't a practice of law in that particular setting. So it went to Justice Sullivan as the Chancery Judge, and then it went up to this court in the State Bar. And it was quite clear what Justice Sullivan and what the court was concerned with were realtors not only preparing, but negotiating contracts, being the only person, the pivotal person, that unrepresented buyers would be interacting with. That is not an auction form of sale. An auction form of sale is that if there's a negotiation at all, it's between bidders in real time as they negotiate amongst themselves what they think the fair price should be. There were public policy consumer elements, of course, to the State Bar case. But the court was also clear in Opinion 26 to be flexible and practical, as I indicated in my opening. So I would look at this case and say, if the court believes there should be some consumer protections, this Maxspan argument had them, basically had everything that the bar is proposing, maybe some slight wording here or there, but the consumer protections were there. I disagree fundamentally with my colleague, Mr. Peach, who says he's not trying to upset auctions. He's just saying, have someone else fill in the blanks. Well, the court doesn't get to the point of who fills in the blanks unless it were to hold that auctions are required to have a 3-day attorney review period. I mean, analytically, it's just not possible. And that's where this court would be upending a well-known practice, and a practice, I would submit, which has a separate legal construct, and that's the legal construct, that the auction is final when the hammer goes down.
Consistent with that last point, does that dovetail into your suggestion that the equity doesn't support any relief for plaintiff as against the seller in this instance?
That is correct, Your Honor. It's not just that point, but it's all the facts and circumstances, all the facts and circumstances that the trial court found. One, you had a full set of robust disclosures nearly a month in advance. The appellant here did attend, I think it was four or five auctions, and she did participate in at least one auction, although she was not the successful bidder. So she and her husband were not strangers to the auction process. That plus the disclosures, plus the legal construct that was clearly enunciated in the materials, all of those things, I think, fall into the equities, which clearly would suggest.
Well, do we also factor in that she wasn't asserting attorney review as the reason for backing out of the contract? And to now say that that makes this contract void ab initio seems inconsistent, or if not, a little bit of some unclean hands in the way this argument developed.
When I read the record in this case, and I've read it a couple of times, mm-hmm. I always come away with the same reaction. She did not default on this deal because she did not have an attorney.
Right.
She defaulted on this deal because she bid within her means, or she was under the impression, mistaken as it may be, that she could get a mortgage, even though the contract was very clear there would be no mortgage contingency.
Right.
That's why she is in this situation. It's not because she was not allowed an attorney to review the materials,
and
because
the
she had nearly a month to do that.
Mr. Venero, as I understand your argument and the dialogue that we're having, the difference between those two positions makes a big difference on whether or not liquidated damage clause succeeds here, correct?
It makes a big difference there, and it also makes a very big difference in terms of retroactivity.
Exactly. There's
been a lot of discussion in my colleague's brief about even if the court were to affirm the appellate division. And by the way, if I just may digress for a moment, it is not accurate, in my view, to say the appellate division opinion has no consumer protections. The consumer protections in the appellate division's opinion are the same ones that the trial court built into its holding, that this was an auction where the materials were sent in advance, an attorney review was encouraged, and the buyer chose not to seek an attorney. That's all in the appellate division opinion. So I would not say it's just an unprotected opinion. But putting that aside, yes, in terms of retroactivity, as Your Honor is aware, this court normally applies its holdings to the case at hand and then, forward. And in order to depart from that, there would have to be far more unfair circumstances, so to speak, than are present in this case.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
I just would like to add very briefly, I know the court will read my brief responding to the Bar Association's many points, but I just wanted to urge two points. One is, I would refrain respectfully from trying to define what is a qualifying auction to this extent. It's perfectly fine for this court to say a traditional bidding war is not part of an auction in terms of what we've been saying, where bidders go to a listing agent, a realtor, and that realtor is negotiating competing bids. We have no problem with saying that's not an auction. Of course, that's not what occurred in this case. We would take issue and believe it would be very unwise judicial policy for this court to say, well, an absolute auction is one thing, but we're not going to define an absolute auction to include a with reserve auction. I think that was Justice Patterson.
If there's going to be an exception to state bar ruling, there has to be at some point a definition of the types of real estate conveyances that are within that exception. You'd agree with that?
Yes. There have to be some definition of what is meant by auction. And we believe we don't need a special master to decide that. It's pretty well known the types of professional auctions, the type of auctions that Maxspan handles. They're without reserve, absolute auctions. That was this case. There's published reserves where the public knows you have to come with a minimum bid. But if you win the minimum bid, if you bid the minimum bid, or if you even go $1 above the minimum bid, that's final. You get the property. The seller must sell. So in all of these various iterations, there's always seems to be the commonality of finality. And we just think it would be unnecessary to start breaking apart parts of a professional auction and say, well, the absolute is an auction, but the bidder reserve, the published reserve, is not, because the construct is the same. But if this court wanted to absolutely rule out bidding wars, things of that nature, we would have no objection to that.
More pointedly, how would you respond to the concerns the bar raised today about online auctions and in its brief?
Well, I only know from, it's anecdotal, but online auctions, the way my client manages them, are very similar to what happened here in the live setting, although there is not a live setting. It's what we've come to have been accustomed in the pandemic, where you register online, you get the pre-bid materials, just like you did in this case, and the bidders, once they qualify and register, they will get a link to a website, and forgive me, I'm not an expert on the technology, and then they will begin to bid against themselves, as you would on the floor of an auction, and then at some point the auction is concluded, and the highest bidder wins. And the contract is signed by DocuSign, and the rest of the system is pretty much what occurred here. But that's not a bidding war in the traditional sense that I think the bar is concerned with. And I think the court could make clear in an opinion that if it were to say the Bar Association holding does not apply to the auction setting, it could look to well-known definitions of auctions, auctions absolute, minimum bid auctions, and you could define an auction that way if there was any concern about it being broadened to some unrealistic definition. And that's, that was my first point. My second point is, and I think it was maybe it was Justice Fernandez-Vinas who asked the question, because the one bar proposal was it should only be sophisticated bidders. And we do not think that is a workable requirement for a couple of reasons. One is it's very hard to define what's sophisticated. But secondly, auctions provide a benefit, as I've been saying, to both seller and bidder. And there's no reason why a first-time bidder who gets the materials in advance, reads them, has the opportunity to consult with a lawyer, and wants to bid on a property and maybe get a very good deal on that property, there's no reason to exclude that person because he or she was not a certified, sophisticated bidder. And always to bring it back to this case, and I will end on this note, Chief Justice, in this case, we had something better than a certification of sophistication. We had a trial court finding that the appellant was an experienced auction attendee, had bid before in an auction. She had attended four or five auctions. That's better than any self-described certification of sophistication. So two things respectfully on the court's agenda in this case. One is, do we hold this appellant to her contractual obligations? We believe in law and in equity, the answer respectfully must be yes. Hold her to those contractual obligations. Going forward, if the court wanted to look at the SPAN disclosures and say, you know, those disclosures are pretty good, and I thought I heard the bar suggest that they were pretty good, use them as a template on a going forward basis. Be a little careful about micromanaging the process in terms of defining auctions to a very granular level. So uphold this enforcement, enforce this case against Ms. Liu, and then going forward, you can decide which disclosures make sense and perhaps which disclosures should be modified.
Thank you, Mr. Bernier.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Goodman.
Honorable Justices, I think one thing that is a common thread through all the arguments that you heard so far is that everybody recognizes that attorney review will not work in an auction setting because an auction really has to have finality. I think also one thing that certainly the Bar Association, the Realtor Association agree upon is that attorney review was never a consideration back in 1983 when the consent order was submitted to this court. There's nothing in the record to indicate that the court considered this issue. The court was dealing with traditional real estate transactions at that time. To suggest that because these auctions were happening, the court had to be aware of it, or that the realtors or the Bar Association must have considered it, I think is a far-fetched notion. The reality is, I don't believe anybody considered auctions at that time. Auctions have been continuously held since 1983, when this court approved the consent order. And attorney review has not been applied because of the finality issue. I would suggest to this court that you simply make it clear that attorney review never was intended to apply to auctions, and you're not going to apply it to auctions. Now, one other thing, because there was an argument made that attorney review is absolute, and certainly I'm aware of the language in the Bar Association attorney review case back in 1983 and a subsequent case, you know, that talks about maybe it's absolute. Even this court recognized, based upon the suggestion of Justice Sullivan, that the attorney review was not necessary to apply to all contracts prepared by real estate licensees. So there was an exception that was built in based upon Justice Sullivan's recommendation, and it was included in the consent order, that attorney review doesn't apply to leases of less than a year. And Justice Sullivan clearly said it would not be in the best interest of the public to include these leases of less than a year within attorney review. So there's already an understanding that attorney review was not intended to cover everything. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about...
I'm sorry, Mr. Gibner, couldn't you read that the other way, however? Because if you have very broad language and then some recognized exceptions, doesn't that suggest that the drafters of that language, when they wanted to create an exception, would have done that in writing?
The answer is that if they had considered auctions, if auctions were part of the record, part of the hearing that was held, then yes. But the reality is here, auctions were just, I don't think they were considered at that time, and it's that simple. So therefore, there was no exception that was created for auctions, and I think there would have been.
Just as a practical matter, just sort of general information, were auctions prevalent at that time in real estate?
The answer is no. I think that certainly there are more auctions now, many more auctions, than there were then. And certainly we have the issue of online auctions, which quite frankly, I think is a bit of a red herring, because they're conducted no differently than a live auction, in essence, where people submit their bids. And let's step back in terms of these online auctions, because I don't think that you need any kind of a hearing to deal with online auctions. It's the same rules that would apply to a traditional auction that we've been talking about. Somebody would have to pre-register to do an online auction. When they pre-registered, they would get all the documents, the sales contract, the bidding process, the finality, the time frame for bidding, all those different things they'd get when they submit, when they register. Same as a regular auction. If they then submit a deposit, they then would be allowed to bid. And the bidding takes place just online. You don't have live auctioneers like you do. That's the one difference. And people would just submit their bids. There's a time frame, a beginning time, an end time. There's no great mystery to auctions online. I don't think that you need any special findings. And any decision that you make in terms of attorney review certainly can be applied to online auctions because they're essentially the same as a traditional auction. This issue of defining auctions, I find interesting. Because we have in our statutes in the UCC all the definitions, all the explanations of auctions that are necessary. Our courts, including this court, Panetta versus Equity One, Justice Long, laid out the parameters for an auction. There's no great mystery. This court has already defined auctions, how they're handled. And in fact, in that case, the Panetta case, Justice Long, for the court, writing for the court, adopted much of the UCC language for auctions. You don't need a hearing to define an auction. And I think it's a red herring to talk about if there's a, quote, bidding war. We don't want to have a problem with the listing agent suddenly saying, submit all bids, and therefore it's going to be now an auction, because everybody has to submit their bids. And it'd be best, highest and final, by next Friday.
Is a bidding war, in the sense that's being discussed here, I know it's not a legal term, but is a bidding war in or out of the definition of auctions in the UCC?
Absolutely out of it. Absolutely out of it. I don't think there's any doubt in any realtor's mind that is not an auction. You don't have a hammer coming down. You don't have the formalities of providing the paperwork up front. And I think that if there is ever an issue with some real estate licensee trying to declare that there's a bidding war, suddenly, oh, I'm going to call it an auction, therefore avoid including the attorney review provision, I think that the Real Estate Commission, which regulates them, can deal with that. Certainly the Bar Association attorneys can deal with it in terms of that being the unauthorized practice of law. I think this court can just very easily say in its opinion, traditional bidding wars are not considered to be auctions. You don't need a special hearing in order to do that.
Sometimes a reserve is lifted in these auctions. Does that change the definition of an auction to a bidding war? Or does that make any distinction in your thinking?
I think that the issue of reserve versus no reserve is really a red herring, quite frankly, Justice.
Okay. But sometimes there's a reserve, but it's lifted.
And sometimes it is lifted. You know, in
does
an
that
auction.
Change anything?
I'm sorry. No, I don't think it changes anything, because the auction process, as it's conducted, is the same whether there's a reserve or no reserve. Whether it gets lifted, it doesn't get lifted. As Mr. Venero said, you know, if you have a without reserve, somebody bids $100,000, let's say, they're the high bidder, they get it. If, let's say, there's a reserve, and maybe the reserve is $75,000, so seller says, I don't have to accept any bid that's less than $75,000. As Mr. Venero said, if somebody bids $75,001 and that's the highest bid, it's treated the same as if there was no reserve. So the process is identical. It's just the seller says, I'll only accept the minimum amount. So I don't think it makes any difference, Your Honor. The issue of protections, because that's another issue that has come up, and certainly, you know, this court has very clearly said that this is all about what's in the best interest of consumers, of the buyers and the sellers that are involved. I think the lower courts have very clearly set out what the protections are in a traditional auction process. And I don't think we really need to go much farther. Those protections are receiving the contract and other documents relating to the auction ahead of time, so the person has advance notice, providing the buyer with an opportunity to consult an attorney, and let's be clear, attorney review and opinion 26 are not about forcing somebody to use an attorney, but just giving them the opportunity, make sure they understand they have the opportunity.
That's pre-auction.
Pre-auction. Protection is also that the buyer goes to the auction knowing that the highest bid is final. And finally, buyers at an auction have an opportunity to go to the property, inspect the property, no different than a traditional sale. And in fact, that's less of a right than they would have in a foreclosure, because foreclosures, typically, they don't have a right to go onto the property and inspect it, and they're buying it as is. At an auction, they typically have a right to go and look at the property. There are open houses that are held. So their rights are protected. Those are four protections that are built in for the buyer with regard to the auction process that sometimes are not even available. And as I mentioned auction, I would just point out an irony here, because the reason that we have attorney review is because a real estate licensee is preparing a contract for two other parties, the buyer and seller. In an auction, a sheriff is doing the same thing. The sheriff is providing the deed, fills in the blanks on the deed after the sheriff's sale. The key document of transferring title from the buyer, from the seller to the buyer, those blanks, the names of the parties, the price that was bid at the auction, are filled in by the sheriff. Now, nobody has ever considered that to be the unauthorized practice of law, even though the sheriff is filling in those blanks for other parties. And I think the same is true here. In an auction process, and I think that Justice Long made this very clear in the Panetta case, when the highest bid is given and the hammer comes down, there's an agreement. You have a binding agreement between the parties. I would suggest that that agreement between the parties includes that the buyer will sign the contract that was provided to the buyer ahead of time. And so all that's being done, whoever fills in the blanks, you know, the names, the ultimate price, whoever fills in that information in the contract is merely filling in what has already been agreed to by the buyer and seller. Nothing more. There's no negotiation. It's not your typical sale where, you know, a residential sale where an offer is submitted by the buyer to the seller, they negotiate the price, they negotiate the terms. No, it's final at that point. The buyer and seller have agreed that that highest bid is going to be accepted by the seller. The parties are going to enter into that contract that was provided ahead of time. So who fills in those blanks where the buyer and seller themselves have agreed to it and have said, okay, we agree to this contract. Just fill in these blanks. It's really not very important.
Can we,
now,
go back,
yes.
Can we go back to the second protection? And the question is, how effective is it in protecting the buyer, the opportunity to consult with an attorney, given the reality, as we all know, that people don't want to spend fees on attorneys if they don't know that they're going to end up in a transaction? How effective is that?
Well, certainly in South Jersey, it's not particularly effective because the South Jersey practice continues. People choose not to hire an attorney, you know, for the most part. And in North Jersey, it might be more effective because people are more attuned to hiring an attorney with regard to these transactions. Quite frankly, I don't know how effective it is because I think that, you know, consumers tend not to read these things. Even if a realtor says you have to read this, the court tells me I have to tell you to read this, you know, it sets forth your right. I find that based upon my conversations with realtors that, you know, it really doesn't have much effect. You know, so I can't state to Your Honor that any type of notice is really going to be very effective to a consumer.
As a practical matter, again, related to the Chief's question, do realtors actually get input on the substantive terms of a contract in this situation? Or would someone in Max Spann's position simply say, if you don't like the, I'm talking about the substantive terms as opposed to the fill-in-the-blank numbers, all the different paragraphs that appear. Would someone in Max Spann's position simply say, if you don't like our contract, you can't participate in this auction?
My understanding and all the auctions that I'm familiar with, including online auctions, the contract is you take it or leave it. If you don't want to sign this contract at the end of the day, you got to go somewhere else, buy another piece of property. Don't buy this property. That's all. That's the buyer's choice at that point. They don't negotiate the individual contracts. That way they have uniformity in terms of all of their auctions. So even if you hire an attorney, I think Mr. Batcher was correct, that all the attorneys can be able to do is, these are the rights that you have in this contract. They're not going to negotiate it.
Maybe advise the client not to participate.
That's exactly right. That would be the maximum amount that I could foresee. Let me see. I apologize. Oh, one other thing. It's been referenced to the Bassford versus Trico case. And while I think that it's illustrative in terms of the fact that there's no great harm in terms of somebody filling in the blanks other than a real estate licensee, even though in that case a broker did conduct the auction. Let's be clear. a party to that contract filled in the blanks. It was a Trico employee that filled in the blanks. I know the word agent was used, but the Appellate Division makes it clear that it was a Trico employee, so therefore, it was the seller that filled in the blanks. And of course, parties to a contract can always fill in the blanks. It's never been an issue. So I just wanted to clarify that particular issue.
So you don't see that case as offering some sort of third option?
I really don't. I think that the arguments this morning that anybody other than a realtor can fill it in is a little bit too broad. I think it's very clear that, you know, certainly if a cousin of buyer or seller or a friend of the buyer or seller fills in the blanks, that could be considered as the unauthorized practice of law, potentially, because there's no exception to the practice of law for them to fill it in. Certainly is an exception for real estate licensees to fill it in under the appropriate circumstances. The only other thing that I would suggest, and Mr. Batcher alluded to the fact that there had been some conversations between the Bar Association and the Realtors Association that really didn't produce anything. I think that Mr. Spann in this case did an excellent job with regard to the Opinion 26 notice, keeping it intact, changing the one reference that's in there in the fourth paragraph from referring to attorney review, which I think we all agree is not practical for auctions, and just advising the buyer this sale will be final. So if the court wanted to provide an additional protection for buyers in this situation to consult lawyers, one solution might be use the form that you already have created for this purpose, and I would suggest adopt the language that Max Spann included, because I think it's right on target. That would provide additional protections for buyers. I don't know if there's any other questions. I think that pretty much covers the different issues that I have, Your Honor.
Are you referring to the bidder registration form, paragraph 2?
No, I'm referring to the form that's at the front of the contract, which says notice to buyer and seller. Read this notice before signing the contract. And the only other thing that I would suggest maybe you change in terms of the Opinion 26 form is maybe at the top, just add in, you know, notice to buyer and seller at an auction, so that this form, the two forms don't get confused. That would be the only other thing I would suggest that you add. But that way you'd be providing protection for the public.
Thank you, Mr. Bittner.
Thank you.
Brief rebuttal.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Very briefly, just responding to a couple of Mr. Goodman's comments just now. He brought up the example of a sheriff filling out the paperwork at the conclusion of a foreclosure. That's a very different circumstance. Foreclosures have judicial oversight, and there's no financial benefit to the sheriff during a foreclosure. There's no marketing of the property or selling of the property by the sheriff. So it's just a completely different situation. And briefly, in response to some of the comments made about Ms. Liu, I want to make clear there's no claim of fraud against her in the case, or that she misrepresented her assets or anything else. If you look at the procedural history, there's no claim like that against her. And I think when you read the trial record and read the trial court's findings, there's no conclusion, no reasonable conclusion, other than that she did everything humanly possible to comply with this contract and obtain the mortgage.
Would it be fair to say that with respect to Ms. Liu, the facts reveal she couldn't obtain the financing, and she at no point sought having an attorney consult and review before this matter was raised during the litigation years later?
She did not consult anyone, I think for the same reasons that have been discussed. You know, most people don't, and it's take it or leave it. But you're correct. She could not obtain a mortgage. She even made a trip to China. She made efforts.
We understand.
Yeah, there's no suggestion that she did anything to Well, because the suggestion has been she had sort of deliberately reneged on the contract, and that's not true. Believe me, she would rather have ended up at least with the property than with nothing. She's neither the property nor her deposit money. Sullivan's have been made whole. Max Spann has been made whole through the second auction. And lastly, you know, a lot of that about Ms. Liu, it just begs the question anyway. Your Honors have to decide about whether to apply the bright line rule. The bottom line, Ms. Liu was deprived of this court's consumer protection by Max Liu. They violated the attorney review rule, and they modified the opinion 26 opinion without this court's permission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peach. Thank you to all counsel for the very helpful arguments this morning.